Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM, the Fan, WFAN, New York.
Welcome back to the program. Lori Rubenson here with you, and... well, there was supposed to be a game at Citi Field on Sunday. They lasted through 9 pitches and then a 2-hour-plus rain delay and a rainout. To talk about the Mets and the rainout and any controversies brewing, we bring in Justin Toscano of The Record. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Hey, Lori, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So it seemed that... I don't blame him, but Marcus Stroman gets out there for 9 pitches. It's raining hard. It was the Mets' call to start the game. Once the game is underway, it's up to the umpires. Stroman, after the game, expresses his displeasure, and he's not wrong that the game shouldn't have started under those conditions. But, talk us through, I want to understand, did Stroman understand that he was criticizing Mets management, or did he think he was criticizing the league when he posted that on Twitter?
You know, that was the same exact question I had. I think he must have thought it was the league, because I personally wouldn't choose to criticize my boss,
right.
The people, who employ me or the people I work with. So I think he thought he was criticizing the league or the umpires, because I think, and in general, most of us might think it's an umpire, umpiring crew's call to start that game and not, the home team's call. Players, might not know that is what I'm thinking. So I think he might have thought he was criticizing the league, because I think in his tweet it just seemed like a pretty overarching umbrella criticism of just how the game shouldn't have started, shouldn't have been played. And I don't really think, especially because Luis Rojas said that Stroman didn't really voice any displeasure when he was told that the game was starting. So I think I don't think he thought he was criticizing Luis Rojas and co pretty indirectly there.
Yeah, that's my only guess, is I don't think he's somebody who would have wanted to call out publicly his own manager and front office for that. I'm guessing that he thought that was on the umpires and the league. Now, what was Luis Rojas's explanation for starting the game? Didn't they see that the rain, you were there, didn't they see that the rain was coming down pretty hard at that point?
Right, yeah, you would think so. And then their explanation, when I got there at about 10:15, it was a drizzle, a light rain, and that was their explanation, was that when they sat down with, or it was Luis Rojas, front office members, ballpark operations members, and then a couple, forecast experts that they had called, that ballpark operations called in. And their explanation, the forecast experts, was that they thought there was a window this afternoon to play a game. And they said that the forecast was making it look like a light rain, a mist-like rain is kind of the exact phrase that Luis Rojas used. And I think his next quote was, obviously the rain wasn't so light. But that was their explanation, was they thought that they expected a window in there in that afternoon where it was going to be only light. And then, 7 minutes into the game, to be exact, 9 pitches, you saw that it wasn't very light. I think Marcus Stroman also tweeted that Lindor was standing in a puddle and Jesus Aguilar couldn't hold his bat. So yeah, it turned pretty ugly there pretty quickly. But like you said, I mean, we were all on our weather app on our phones for the past day, seeing that this game probably wasn't going to be played, and they tried to start it anyways.
Yeah, it reminds me that people often want to blame analytics for different things. In this case, it was almost weather analytics. Well, the weather measurement forecasts say that it's going to be a drizzle. But at a certain point, it is up to the powers that be and individuals, humans, to take a look and see what their eyes tell them. In this state, it was pretty clear. The forecast may say drizzle, but my eyes telling me, the heavy stuff's not coming in for a while. Like, it's coming down now, and they seem to have missed that. So it made them look silly. The other part of it that I didn't understand, I don't know if anybody asked Luis Rojas this in the post-game news conference, was if you even think that, okay, it's going to lighten up and we think we're going to get through this game, but it is raining pretty significantly right now, why wouldn't you start with an opener in this instance,
right,
and not just, if there might be a delay pretty quickly or that's in play here, why not start with, what's a Robert Gsellman, for instance, doing on this roster if not to go on out there and start a game as an opener in the rain?
Right, exactly. No, and I think that was the main gripe of a lot of fans, and fairly, because on the other side of things, like the Marlins, who came in, they came into the season with a 4-man rotation anyways, and they had an injury in their rotation. So like, they had a couple TBDs for the series, but they decided to go with a theoretical opener today, and then a bullpen game, mostly because they knew, this rain was coming and they prepared for that. I'm not sure why the Mets didn't go that route. My best guess is that they were probably just trying to keep the rotation intact, especially because they did have that delay at the beginning of the season. They were not able to play those games. And I mean, but that's the one thing I was thinking about was, if you knew the rain was going to come, why not even like get a Joey Lucchese out there, mm-hmm, who was on this roster to be the fifth starter, but hasn't made a fifth start yet because they haven't required that turn through the rotation to this point because of off days. And like you said, a Robert Gsellman, like some guy that they pointed to all spring. Like, Robert Gsellman is somebody that, might be near his last straw with the team, and he's got options and he still made the roster. So it's like, what's he doing on the roster if not to go, multiple innings, go three or four even. And he hasn't pitched this season yet. So yeah, that was the curious part to me, is if you take this chance, and like you said, your eyes will tell you that it was a big risk. It was dreary. Even if the rain wasn't coming down very hard when they were taking the tarp off, like, you could just, it was in the forecast. Like, it was not going to stop, and it is going into tomorrow. Like, we've known this for a couple of days. So if you knew that it was that big of a risk, I'm not sure why you burn your second best starter right now, especially with Carlos Carrasco out, when you have four important games against the Phillies who have been pretty red hot coming up. And I think that's the most curious part to me. And I think that's probably the biggest gripe that I've seen, on social media from fans, and it's a fair one. And even, Marcus Stroman alluded to it at the end of that tweet that you and I talked about a few minutes ago, just like, now he's got to wait another 5 days. Probably not going to be 5 days. I can probably bring him back sooner if he feels fine, but it's just that you need, like, this team, especially with Carrasco out and the struggles they've had with the bullpen and hitting with runners in scoring position, they need optimal starts from their best starters, and they really effectively burned, like, a guy's day-to-day.
Talking to Justin Toscano from The Record about the Mets, and you mentioned struggles with bullpen, struggles with the lineup early. We all know we're 5 games in. It's 162-game season. I think the Mets will hit. The bullpen, so how worried, how legitimate, if you're a Mets fan whose residence is somewhere down the block from Panic City, but you're trying not to go there 5 games into the season, but you see it. You see the subway stop says Panic City, and you can see it. How legitimately worried should Mets fans be about the Mets bullpen?
Yeah, at this point, I would say that you see the Panic City subway stop and there's like a nice little ice cream stand on that stop. Like, it is very enticing. I think, like, if I were a Mets fan, like, look, this is the group, the position group on the team that was the highest risk heading into spring training? Was the highest risk leaving spring training? Like, we have known this for months. Like, the story, the book has almost been out on these guys that it's, okay, if Familia and Betances don't bounce back, it's going to be very tough. And that was even before Seth Lugo got, you know, was injured, and we knew that he wasn't going to be back till mid-May. So now you look at it and you go through this first week where you say, at one point, the first six guys to pitch out of that bullpen had given up a run until Joey Lucchese threw two scoreless innings in the series finale in Philly. Everybody else had given up at least a run in action. And I think, like, you know, Mets fans, especially in the Mets, had hoped that Trevor May was going to be lights out. Mm-hmm. He wasn't on night one. They hoped Aaron Loop was going to, you know, the bullpen's only lefty, was going to be lights out. He wasn't on night one. Even Miguel Castro, who was lights out during spring training and they really needed, gave up a run the next night. And they looked like, even it's a big testament to a shaky bullpen when an 8-4 victory in Philly, almost like they almost make you sweat it out, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if I were a Mets fan, that is the one legitimate, you mentioned it. Like, I agree with you on the lineup. Like, this team is too talented to hit like this for an entire 162. Things are going to come around. I'm not so sure about the bullpen because it's, you know, it's a long time between now and mid-May when we think Seth Lugo can come back, when he should be on track to be back. And especially in 2019, we saw how a bad bullpen could affect so many games, even in the first half, and can really put you in a hole. And I think it's just, it's a really big problem because it doesn't look like Familia is back and it doesn't look like they trust him. Didn't look like they trusted Betances, and now he's, you know, on the injured list. And yeah, like if Trevor May and Aaron Loop and Miguel Castro aren't absolutely lights out, then you're kind of hinging on Edwin Diaz being the guy there. And it's like, he's had his own struggles since coming to New York. So it's I think it is a very, very legitimate concern.
Yeah. And we're 65 games into Luis Rojas's Major League Baseball managerial career. Obviously has a lot of experience at other levels, but nothing makes a manager look bad like a bad bullpen and like not having options that he trusts. So if you were Luis Rojas with the options you have, or, and by the way, you can dip down into the minor leagues and call guys up if Tommy Hunter and others float your boat. But you tell me, with the guys that you have here, what would you do if you were Luis Rojas in terms of managing that bullpen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I honestly think, like you said, the biggest, you know, it's almost like a lose-lose. If you've got a talented team, you know, if they don't play well, it's your fault. If they do play well, you don't get any of the credit. I think he handled it perfectly the first few nights. Like, that's exactly what I would have done, is gone to Trevor May in the eighth inning. I'm still staking my claim to that. I would put Trevor May in the eighth, Edwin Diaz in the ninth. I think that gives you the best shot. If you've got to use Edwin Diaz in high leverage in the eighth and burn him there, then you do it if you need, you know, if you absolutely need a game. But I think your best shot is Trevor May in the eighth, Edwin Diaz in the ninth. Before that, you know, I'm really not using Jeurys Familia in the seventh inning on. Before that, at this point, I would go Aaron Loop. Like, when they, you know, would have Justin Wilson in a seventh inning, mm-hmm. and he slotted in pretty nicely into that role. I was very surprised that they didn't bring him back, by the way, especially because he hadn't signed until late. But, yeah, I honestly, Trevor Hildenberger, who they, you know, called up in place of Betances, yep. had a very nice spring. And I was very surprised that he got cut, you know, as early as he did, reassigned as early as he did. But you've also got, like you mentioned, Tommy Hunter in the minors, and then, like, a guy like Sam McWilliams, a career minor leaguer who they obviously felt confident enough in to give him a major league deal. His stuff is there. He's got, you know, a fastball that was touching 96 early in spring that he hoped could tick up a little bit. So I think if things really go bad with Familia, especially, and Betances with a comeback, and things just go awful, I think you dip into that. I think, you pull up a Sam McWilliams or you use Trevor Hildenberger more. Like, you've got to find something. But as of right now, the only thing I would feel confident is Miguel Castro or Trevor May for the eighth, and then Edwin Diaz for the ninth. Because at least I know that Trevor May is a veteran enough guy. He's going to be able to work through some things. And I think, you know, with Miguel Castro, why they traded for him last year was not only was he controllable, but his stuff is good. And I think I'm going to trust the stuff, especially because they've liked that since the spring, and he's looked pretty good. And even though he did give up a run in Philly. He looked good for the most part. So I'm going to go him and Trevor May for the eighth and Edwin Diaz for the ninth. But it's almost like I don't really feel confident in that. And if I don't feel confident in that, I'm not sure like how Luis Rojas feels behind closed doors.
Yeah, and the problem is, I'm with you. I think that based on stuff, if used properly, Castro, May, and Diaz should perform most of the time reasonably well. The problem is, if there are only three people in a bullpen that a manager has any faith in, then pretty quickly those guys get overused, and then they don't pitch as well, and then the fans are on them, and their confidence gets shot, and now the manager doesn't have confidence in them either. So somewhere along the lines, whether it is Trevor Hilgenberger, Tommy Hunter, Sam McWilliams, somebody, Aaron Loop, somebody, the Mets are going to have to extend this bullpen. I don't know, Jordan Yamamoto, you know, whatever it is, they're going to have to extend it beyond three guys, or those three guys will burn out. Let me throw another name, because you know Mets fans always going to ask or whatever, but Shane Green, still out there, might not be elite stuff anymore. Velocity may be coming down, but is there, the more he just lingers out there waiting for some money, is there any possibility with the Mets' struggles that they go out there and look for a guy like that, or is that just something where it doesn't work on the 40-man roster?
No, I think there could be, especially if these bullpen issues linger for another week or two, and they're pretty consistent. I mean, Zach Scott, when he spoke Saturday, was pretty confident, and that this is only publicly, so only so much would be gleaned, but he was confident in the arms that they had in-house. But he did say, is you know, the caveat always is, like, we're always going to look to improve. And as that cliche, that adage goes, you can never have enough pitching. And I think with Steve Cohen's, like, I think they've got a little more flexibility to do something like that, to sign somebody like that. So I would think that's a real possibility, based on my perspective, just because I think, like you mentioned, like, you've got to find a way to extend the quality options in that pen and to give yourself some depth there, because it's like that was an area they felt they did have some depth. And so if they're not confident with some of the younger guys, the Hildenbergers, or even a veteran like Tommy Hunter, who's, you know, at the alt site, like, you've got to go outside, because, I mean, it's a long time between now and mid-May and until Seth Lugo comes back. And right now, it's just, and even when he does come back, if the others that you and I have talked about aren't performing or aren't performing consistently like the Mets believed, I mean, that's a real issue. Now, the good thing, I guess, for them, like, the good news is that in the modern-day game, a lot of these bullpens are volatile, and relievers can be unpredictable. So if you had to pick, like, a position group to maybe be a little shaky, like, it'd be the bullpen. But because a lot of teams are facing the same deal, where bullpens go through ebbs and flows, where they're good and bad. You know, I think this one's got the names in there to be a positive toward the end of the, you know, to not be a complete liability when we look back after 162, but it hasn't started out good. And I, you know, I'm very surprised that I didn't think it would be this bad.
Yeah, not this bad this soon. Felt a little shaky there. Let's flip to a positive. I know, shocking to everybody, but Taijuan Walker, I was impressed. And you know, he pitched well last year, obviously, especially well with Toronto. But is this somebody where the Mets may have evaluated and gotten a guy who can stick around for a couple of years and really give them, you know, really lengthens that rotation?
Yeah, especially with, like, an option in his contract. I mean, this is somebody that, when you look at it projecting out, like, Stroman, a free agent after this year, so is Noah Syndergaard. And so they've been trying to balance that, like, how do we focus on maybe retaining those guys, but if we can't, trying to build our rotation for the future too. And I think Taijuan Walker is a guy that they saw and projected out to be somebody who could help them over multiple years and be an asset, especially because when you look at him, remember 2018, coming off of Tommy John, like, when he went into Tommy John surgery, I mean, it had always been a positive for him in his career, and he was ticking up, and then to have that was kind of just so devastating. And he really, I think he'd only made 15 starts, or 13 starts or something since that Tommy John before the one he made last Thursday. And I think the biggest positive with him that I see was he's a guy who didn't really have high velocity and hasn't for a long time. But he was hitting 96 miles per hour, you know, into his fourth, fifth inning on Thursday. And he hasn't averaged over 94 on his fastball since I think 2016. So the early returns are very good. And why that's important is that a lot of times these guys coming off of Tommy John, for people listening at home, it's like it takes them a while to get back up to that. But the fact that now he's getting back up to that, and some of it has to do with mechanically, but some of it's just that he's further out from that surgery. So I think this is a guy that they really thought could help them not only this year, but that he still had enough left in the tank, especially after what he showed in 2020. Granted, it was pretty short, and he hasn't handled a full 30-plus start load, you know, in a long time. I mean, I think they felt this was a guy that they projected could give them even more because he was getting further out from Tommy John and because, you know, they could figure things out with him.
Yeah, so last one before I let you go is on the Mets, you know, the batting order and the offense, which I think you and I both feel will, you look at the back of the baseball cards and the track record of these players and the ability, this team is going to score runs, except for maybe when Jacob deGrom pitches, where they will never score runs because we're all doomed to just live in that world. But for the batting order, it looked like, I know we didn't play on Sunday, but it looked like the Mets were starting to move Jeff McNeil up in the order. Were you surprised, given McNeil's track record and ability, that the whole lefty-righty thing had, that there was, I don't know if you want to call it a stubbornness, but that the Mets were taking a guy like McNeil and batting him seventh, and then thinking about even just what that means for protection for McNeil, or, you know, runners on base or people to knock him in and all of that, not maybe maximizing that asset.
Yeah, I was really surprised, especially because with the three-batter rule now, the three-batter minimum, it's almost like phase that lefty-righty matchup thought out, like phase it out in terms of how you're constructing the lineup, or it could a little bit. So I was very surprised considering it was so early in the season. I know he struggled in spring, but I think with some of your best players, especially with your best hitters like that, and he is one of them, like, you've got to give him some grace. Like, you don't want to immediately move a guy. And now Luis Rojas knows him really well, has known him since the minors. They've obviously got a great relationship. McNeil's got a ton of respect for him, as, you know, all of his players do. But I was surprised that it came that early because, you know, you just never expect. I get splitting the lefties, you know, was the explanation. But I don't think in any world on this team yet, this early in the season, that Jonathan Villar should be batting ahead of Jeff McNeil. Like, to me, that isn't something that should happen. I know that VR had a few at-bats the previous day. Like, he actually finished a homer, you know, shy of the cycle. But, like, those were three at-bats in almost garbage time and, you know, a blowout of a game. And I think, like, we saw that Wednesday in Philly and then the home opener when McNeil was moved, but, you know, was out of the lineup one day, then behind VR the next, that VR came up in a lot of spots where you would actually want to have Jeff McNeil.
Sure.
So I was very surprised because you want to get, like, for me, if I've got McNeil hitting behind guys like Dom Smith, you know, Pete Alonso, Michael Conforto, that's more runners in scoring position, RBI opportunities for a guy like Jeff McNeil, who not only does he, you know, use the whole field and really goes the other way with it, just takes whatever pitch he gets and can get a bat on anything, which you really want in those spots because the Mets haven't been good in them. But he's a guy that can run into some power, too, if he gets his pitch. And so I was really surprised that the demotion, if we want to call it, came that soon. But then I guess we saw their philosophy with that, with struggling players, that they did it with Michael Conforto today. So,
yeah, my point was no one with an R, whether it's a VR or a Pillar, should be batting in front of Jeff McNeil. He's a better hitter, and any logic that somehow dictates that does not make sense to me. Justin Toscano covers the Mets for The Record, does an excellent job. Thanks so much for the time. Look forward to catching up with you down the road.
Yep, always happy to do it. Thanks for having me on, Lori.
All righty, 11. 11-
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.